So it's the 12th episode of the Haven Rugby League Fans podcast. Today we go back to one of the themes that's proven very popular in the podcast, getting some good listening figures for interviews with ex-coaches, and one that this is an interview I've been looking forward to for a while now. We've had several ex-coaches on, but we've got a guy who contributed so much to Whitehaven in his day, back in the day at the club. We've got Paul Cullen. Welcome along, Paul. Great to have you with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Dave. Good to catch up again, mate. And I remember my times at Whitehaven very, very fondly. I still remember them on a daily basis. Lessons learnt there stayed with me for the rest of my life. It was a difficult period, but one that I remember very fondly. The work, and probably more importantly, the people that I met along the way, and what I learned from them in all aspects of the game. I probably learned more in the 2 years at Whitehaven as a coach than I did in my previous four or five at Warrington as an assistant coach. It was stripped bare, and I say that with all due respect. And it was a very tough, steep learning curve, and put right by a number of people on many occasions, and those lessons stay with me.
Very good, very good. Yeah, I mean, going back to that time, I mean, as I say, it was 2000, was the start of the new millennium. You'd been man and boy at the Wilderspool with Warrington, with the Wolves. Bit of a local hero, Warrington lad, born and bred. Starred for the club for 17 seasons, just looking at the records. Did you reach a point where you knew that it was for your own development, for your own whatever it was, that your time, you come to a natural break at Warrington at that point?
It was a decision I'd made that built for about 6 to 12 months. Without ever thinking I'd get to the point where I'd leave Warrington. I'd played there for 17 years from 1980 to 1997, which was the end of the first year of the full-time professionalism of Super League. So I did 16 years as a professional in a semi-pro game, as it was, and then a full year as a full-time pro. And then did 3 years as an assistant coach. But it got to the point then when I just simply didn't think the club was going in the right direction, and I left on a matter of principle. So I didn't have a job to go to. I didn't interview for the Whitehaven job. I simply worked out pretty quickly that I didn't want to be a part of what was happening at Warrington at that particular point. So I literally just resigned on a matter of principle and walked away. Fortunately for me, my real good friend Gary Chambers, who is a Whitehaven guy, and his family connections were intrinsically linked right through Whitehaven with his old man Jimmy and his brother Craig, a player at the club at the time. And Gary was on the coaching staff with me at Warrington. And Gary said, mate, if you want, I'll ring Whitehaven if I can. If there's a vacancy, see if they're interested. And that's how it came about, you know. So I didn't go for career development. It just turned out that way, Dave. I left on a matter of principle. I didn't like the culture at Warrington. I had no control over it or how the culture was developing. And I left on a matter of principle. To be fair, the Whitehaven players caught the brunt of that, because I left because I didn't like the way the club was being run. I didn't like the culture. And there was no way on God's green earth I was going to go to another club and allow that to happen. So I hit the Whitehaven players hard, and they cop the wrath of what I didn't like at Warrington. Hopefully, for everyone's betterment, but we clashed heads with a few in doing that. And I'll allude to it. I'll get to it as we go further on. But that's how it came about. Yeah. I met the board of directors, or a number of the guys, as it was then, up in the lakes. I went up the following night, and that was the start of the next 2 years, and it really was then the start of my development as a coach.
Brilliant, yeah. I mean, you say about the situation at Warrington was becoming difficult, perhaps even untenable for you, but Whitehaven at the time had gone through a pretty traumatic 12 months. There's been talk of a merger. Kevin Tamaty had been the coach and had had what seemed to be on paper a pretty useful squad who had probably underperformed. So you weren't coming in for an easy ride at White Haven. Were you aware of that when you sort of came and spoke to the club officials?
Dave, I had absolutely no idea whatsoever. And you know, to my discredit, I didn't know who the players were. I knew Kevin had gone to Whitehaven, but I hadn't followed it that closely, to be honest. Whitehaven were on my radar because Gary Chambers and Chris Rudd, Dave Elliott, spoke of them so often. It was almost your second team because that was a part of our kind of dressing room banter. The Maras took one corner and Whitehaven was spoke of very fondly. And I always had a view that it was a tough, hard place that wouldn't suffer fools. That's because of the conversations I'd kind of listened to or have been involved with with Gary Chambers and Chris Rudd and Dave Elliott. John Roper was in that kind of conversation as well.
Yeah.
But the banter was reasonable. It was lively. But I didn't know. I didn't know who the players were. So I kind of I left because I needed to leave. I didn't leave because I wanted to go somewhere else. It was the drink culture at Warrington at that point was out of control. And as much as I tried to correct it and fight against it, it literally was king canoe. The tide was coming in and I couldn't stop it. And when I expressed my opinions very clearly, I didn't get any response. I didn't get any support. And it carried on. I could see it was only going to go one way. Yeah. Unfortunately, it did. Because when I went back, I was the fourth coach in 12 months, you know, and after being away for 2 years, it was, a disaster, by design, but Warrington was a disaster waiting to happen. And as much as I tried to stop it, I couldn't, so I decided to leave. I didn't want to be a part of it. I didn't want to be culpable by being associated with something that I knew would go wrong. So when I went to Whitehaven, I found myself to be the most fortunate, luckiest coach ever, because when I've gone in and took my first training session, I've literally, and I was really, really lucky to have an assistant coach like Pete Smith. It was more than an assistant coach. It's a disservice to him that. Pete was a friend, a colleague. But he put me right on so many things culturally that I wanted to change and couldn't. I needed a bit more time. And Peter said, listen, Matter, have a minute with this one. Don't go piling in because you'll not win in that way. You find a different way of getting your point across. Because you know, Dave, for one example, mate, what on earth was a back shift?
Yes.
You know, I'm sure the people at Whitehaven listen to this going, like, what's the honour? I had no idea what early's, late night's back shift was.
That's
right. So when I'm organising training sessions and I want 30 people there at 6 o'clock at night, and I'm not taking one excuse from anyone, or anyone can be 1 second late. As you know now, that's designed to fail. I didn't know it at the time. So me understanding and not banging heads with decent, honest people who just simply can't get away from work.
Yes.
And farmers, most of the team works at Sellafield or at, what was the one where, you know, Graham Morton and David Seeds works at the top of Kells.
Marshawn.
Yeah, Marshawn.
Or Brad Wilson, yeah.
Quickly had to learn that what I wanted was not the most important thing in the world. These guys were decent, honourable people, family men, earning a living, and I had to cut my cloth accordingly. And it took me a while to get that point. It really, really did.
Bit of a major change, really, from what you've been in before, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, yes, you know, it's although we were semi-professional at Warrington, we were very well paid for doing what we did. I mean, most of us had jobs that accommodated the fact that we trained every morning before we went to work, and we trained every night after work, and weekends were a given. We're training and we're playing, and then we were full-time professionals for 12 months, and then a coach in a full-time professional environment for 3 years. So my demands and my knowledge of how to improve the group were geared around that. And it simply didn't work at Whitehaven. And as much as I wanted to force a square peg into a round hole, I eventually just had to succeed and listen to the advice of people like Peter Smith and Kenny Shepherd, brilliant mentor on on why what I'm trying to do is not working. The four were brilliant. Keith Nelson, fantastic in teaching me lessons in life, let alone rugby league, about the way to speak to people, good manners, what will work at Whitehaven and what won't work, whether I agree with it. And it was a culture within its own right. And who am I to go in there and rip that to pieces just because I want everyone at training at 6 o'clock? There's more, actually, as we know now, there's more important things in life.
That's right.
Players have a right to operate at the level they want to play at.
Yeah, that's right. Very good. Yeah, very incisive that. Just looking back to that time, it was summer rugby, but at that particular time, the rugby league outside of Super League, it were actually changing its sort of schedule. So Whitehaven had finished playing in rather, what's the word, poor condition. The last few games with Kevin Tamati, I think they got well beat. Morale was low. The games finished in July. But for that year, the season was kicking off in the same year, in December of the same year. So that was a pretty quick turnaround and a pretty short pre-season for you, I would imagine, was it, coming up there?
I honest to goodness, couldn't believe it when I got to Whitehaven. Warrington's practically subtropical by comparison. I've never been so cold, been so wet, been so battered by the elements in all my life. I literally didn't know what to do with myself. You remember some of the games where we've played at the Rec and the end away from Kells, the Hensingham end, it's literally under 3 foot of water. Guys are sliding 15 metres to score tries. You know, our training facilities, as you know, Dave, you were just as much a part of it as I was then, were scrambling around to find a training facility.
Yeah.
We're running up and down Kells Hill. We're running on the tarmac, on the miners outside. It was absolutely awful. Finding a pitch that's flat and dry was practically impossible. You know, so that was a huge challenge, a challenge that
absolutely.
I'd never faced before.
Yeah. So the start of that, the first game for that season, just looking back at the records, was away at Widnes, which was always going to be a tough game. And I suppose one which everybody would be looking at with more than passing interest to see, well, how's Whitehaven going to do under the new coach? And you went to Widnes and actually ran them pretty close to the record show for that first game in charge.
Well, we all look for and take different things from any game. Win, draw, lose, play well, play poorly, play indifferently. Although, I lost my first five. I think if I lost one more, I'd have gone. I'd have walked out if I
That's
lost
right.
the six. I told
That's
the players
right.
that before the sixth game. But one thing that literally, and I think of this so often, it's not funny. On that day, I drove from Warrington, which is 3 miles from Widnes, to Whitehaven to get on the team coach to drive back to Widnes to play the game. And I'd spent 2 or 3 months battering, absolutely hammering the group that I had, I thought, into shape. And when I got, and there were some highs and some lows in that. There's some great stories, and we'll hopefully get to them shortly. But that was a real tough pre-season opener. But on that day, I'd driven up, and I got to the ground, packed up, and there's the bus. And I'm there as early as I possibly can be, set off at the crack of dawn. And as the players are beginning to arrive to get on the bus, we've all packed up just at the, you know, as you go through, Dave, past the social club, you park at the back there behind the stands. I'm sat on the bus and I'm sat right at the front. And then the players simply turn up in the cars or they're getting dropped off by the good lady. And each one gets out with his kit bag and a slab. It's a 4-pack, it's a 6-pack, it's a 12-pack. And I'm kind of looking at it going, I didn't see this coming. What on earth is happening here? Everyone's getting out the car with a can of beer or a crate of beer or some form of drink after I've just battered them for nearly 2 or 3 months in the worst weather conditions I've ever had to get them into shape. And everyone had told me about the pelican syndrome. The guys don't they don't travel. They don't go past the pelican. The garage That's on the right. way out.
Yeah.
And I think I've hit them as hard as I can about how tough it is on the road and what we need to be to improve our level of professionalism. And I sat on the bus and after driving 150 miles, took me nearly two and a half hours to do it. The motorway's great, but when you come off at Junction 40, as we know, Dave, you're behind a caravan for an hour and a half, aren't you, in a tractor?
That's right.
And I'm sat there watching practically every player in the squad get off with some form of alcohol to drink on the way home. And I'm thinking, what is going on? And I just literally said to let them all do it, all put the beer under the bus, all get on the bus. And then I stood up and made every single one of them get off the bus and take every ounce of drink off the bus and leave it in the car park. And I've just simply said, if you think I'm going to be a part of that, you're kidding yourselves. I'm not coming up here doing this so you can have a pick up and a jolly on the way home. Prohibition doesn't work, Dave. That's why we've got organized crime. They tried to stop it in America in the early 1900s, and look what happened there. Telling people not to drink forever doesn't work. And who am I to stop people having a social drink? No one. But I tell you what, you're not doing it on my bus in my company. And it was such an important game for that. So we drove off and left a bonfire of ale in the car park at Whitehaven. It just, I still to this day don't know what happened to it, unless it was still there when they got back because they didn't come home with them.
Yeah.
So it was just so important to think that, you know, we will never improve if this is what this trip to Widnes is, just a piss up on the way home. So maybe it's symbolic, Dave. Maybe it's me being a bit arrogant, a bit stroppy. I don't know, but the message is clear. I'm having a go here, and all I want you, I'm going to give you everything I've got, and that's all I want in return. Just give me everything you've got. And getting pissed on the way home isn't part of my plan.
Part of it, no. So you put a marker down, really, at the very outset.
I was a bit disappointed, Dave, because I thought, and there's them learning curves. I thought I'd put enough markers down through the pre-season, but you deliver a message, and you don't really know how it's landing and how it's being understood. There's some great, great days where we're training up on that pit pitch at Kells. The big way, goodness me. I mean, there's a great story that when I've gone there and I've sat down with people that are trust then within the club and go, right, what is the culture? What am I dealing with here? How do we train? When do we train? Where do we train? What does it look like? And like most clubs, there's a drink culture. I don't mean there's a bad one or it's anything untoward or anything that can't, that's going to derail us. But, you know, We all work very hard. We've all got these jobs. We'll have a drink on a Friday night. Might go to Saturday, and you know we'll have a day out on a Sunday or something like that. I went, right, from now on, we're training 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning, all the way through that winter. And I've done it just to be awkward. I've done it to make people take notice. But if you're going to have a big drink on a Friday and a big drink on a Saturday, you're in trouble Sunday morning.
Yeah.
You know, so that first training session, there's a sea of vomit on that pitch. Because everyone's done what they're going to do, and they've done it and carried on, and I've just literally battered them. There's no sports science involved. It was literally, if this is the way that you carry on, I'm not going to change. So I'm going to run you into the ground every Saturday morning, every Sunday morning. Drink what you want on a Friday night, Saturday night. And if you don't turn up on Saturday and Sunday, you won't be playing.
Yeah.
Now, that's my mentality. You know, you learn then you can't live with that 24/7. 7 days a week, 365. You have to give and take a little bit, but the message was very, very clear. And you know, one of those early sessions, I think I'd done it for a Sunday morning, and I probably pinched every bit of kit I could get from Warrington. I could have landed a plane on that pitch. There was that many cones and bollards down. And about seven people turned up for training on one of my first ones. And there's my lesson, because they just worked either the earlys, the lates, the night shift, the back shift, or they were still pissed from the Saturday night. I still to this very day don't know what happened, but it was me, Pete Smith, and about six players. And it took me a while to get the message through that things are changing. It's not what's happened before. I don't care who's been there before me. What's happened, this is the way it's going to be.
This is the way it's going to be, yeah, brilliant.
You want to be a part of it. I've got something to give you. I know I have. All I want from you is as much from you as I'm from, you know, the other way. And that's turn up on time, be in a reasonable state. And by the way, I'm going to batter you. I'm going to literally run you to exhaustion point and then teach you some skills. If you want it, turn up. If you don't waste me time. And eventually, the six went to 12, to 18, to 24. We could actually get some skills in.
So, that's an indicator that people were starting to buy into it at that stage then. Yeah.
Well, David, there was, I don't know how many Whitehaven players lived in Kells or on Kells on the top there, but all of a sudden, if I said we're trading at 7 o'clock, at 5 to 7, I was it was me and Peter Smith there, and at 7 o'clock, they just came out the houses and walked down. Yeah. It was bizarre.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then go, right, guys, you're trading in that fog or the fog off the sea. And you couldn't see from the halfway line to the post. And at 7:30, it completely gone. It's the nicest day ever. And it was like, for me, as a complete outsider, I mean, someone, Dave, at one point, tied a horse to the post. The guy who has that kind of little farm thing on the top there came out whilst we were training. Yeah. Walked two horses across the field, right across me drills. And I'm looking at him thinking, like a pig. He's walked out, tied two horses to the post. And the horses then ate the grass in about a 3 foot circle, the length of the lead. And the players just ran round the horses. never blinked, never said a word. What's happening here? There's two cart horses tied to the post.
It was never in the coaching manual, eh?
It definitely wasn't in the RFL skill drills list, that one.
Anyway, as you say, a steep learning curve for all concerned in those early days. And as I say, after a bit of a shaky start, as I say, the wins, I mean, took well into January before choked up your first win. But after that, things started to gain a bit of momentum. And I remember going through the Gateshead on a Wednesday evening for a Challenge Cup tie. And it was St. Valentine's Day because it was labelled the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Why didn't you just run amok against Gateshead Thunder in this Challenge Cup tie? And that was just after Gateshead had come back into the league after being in the Super League. So that could have been a difficult tie, but it was a great performance from Whitehaven to get an absolutely runaway victory at the Gateshead Stadium that Wednesday evening.
Well, it does me out good to hear that, Dave. It really does, because behind the scenes there, I'm, you know, along with Pete Smith, and it's and along with that group of support, you'll know it because you were a part of it, Dave. That group of support, and I generally thought I appreciated it at the time, but when you look back, I really didn't, in terms of the volume of work that was being done for me behind the scenes that sometimes I didn't even really see. You know, as you know, Dave, you're probably present at most of those training sessions, wherever we found to train, and that's what we were doing at that point. No, there's a, you know, whether it be Jimmy Clements or, you know, Harry O'Neill and that of supporters that mopped the dressing room, laid out the cones, cleaned up, brought drink, brought food, did everything. Because I think people then thought something's happening here and we want to be a part of it and we're not going to miss this because it feels like something might happen. I kind of thought that was the vibe, the feeling going around. But people just generally gave their time, gave their effort for free, and it blew me. I was staggered by it. That I think generally that if people are realising I'm driving 150 mile, staying over in the hotel opposite. What's the nightclub, Dave, that I never went in?
Gallagher's.
Gallagher's. What's the hotel opposite?
The Waverley. Yeah.
Waverley for about.
Run by Cheryl and Richard.
Honestly, it was. I've never ever seen anything quite like it. It was an absolute education. I loved it. I really did, but it really put me out of my comfort zone. And I thought people generally are respecting and responding to the effort I'm making. And
absolutely.
And slowly and surely, I began to dismantle what wasn't working in terms of on-field. And for me, it was pretty clear. We got so much talent. I couldn't believe me luck when I got there and finally saw. I remember saying to Pete Smith, you know, and excuse my language, in a podcast, I literally went, fuck me, Peter, who is that? He went, mate, that's David Seeds. And I went, what the fuck's he doing here?
Yeah.
I said, mate, he's Super League. What? And I literally couldn't believe it. Footwork, pace, hard as nails, fit as a fiddle. I went, fuck me, we can build a team around him. And then Aaron Lester pops up, come back a little bit late in the, because that's what Aaron did in the day. And I went, fuck me, we've got a Super League number nine here. He's as good as any. He's better than what Warrington have got.
That's John Clark. Yeah.
Now, John blossomed into a brilliant nine, but Aaron Lester was a better player then than John Clark was.
Yeah.
And he was better than the vast majority of Super League nines. David Fatulofa. I went, geez, this is quality. You know, and you know, Graham Morton, Howard Hill, Craig Chambers, and Craig Chambers would be probably my biggest regret at Whitehaven, but I lost Craig Chambers. I couldn't find a way to engage him and get him involved in what I wanted. And we clashed heads and we parted company, and he didn't come back till I left. And I regret that to this day. I really do. I would have hoped now I could have found a way of getting him back involved, because he was so talented. But it wasn't to be, you know. Craig played his part in that just as much as I did. We're good friends. We've spoken many times since. You know, we've shook hands on the difficulties that we had at the time. It was simply a culture clash. I couldn't get him to play in the way I wanted him to play, and he couldn't really accept that. His talent was the offload, and at that point, I think we were on, I don't know, 30 offloads a game, and 30 of them went on the floor, and they picked up and scored. So I had to do some Graham Morton, brilliant offloading Graham Morton, but we had to pull it back in because the support process wasn't there. So every time we offloaded, they scored.
Yeah.
You know, so putting the game plan down to simple channels and simple completion and a kick and chase. You had, you know, Lee Kiddy had a brilliant kick. Wayne Kitchen, a brilliant kick. Lost both players very early on in my time there with serious injuries. But, you know, Craig Walsh could have been anything. Great players. So just trying to simplify it to get in a position in a game where we had enough energy, enough guile, enough strength to hang on. And then, you know, you mentioned the Gateshead game and you go, this can work, this. So was it a great game in terms of the numbers and the actual score? Yes, it was. But it's probably more important in the fact that we're getting some confidence here. They're really beginning to believe in, I'm doing this for the right reason. We're going to bang heads with some, and we're going to lose one or two on the way. Unfortunately, that's going to be collateral damage. I'd like everybody on board, and I'd like to have the skills to get everyone on board, but I'm not quite there myself as a coach.
But
when you come away with that, Dave, and on the way back, there was no drink on the coach, and we've not stopped on the way to drink.
So things were changing for the better.
I thought so. And I understand that prohibition doesn't work. I've liked to drink myself in the past, but I kind of think I overdo it when it's relevant and you can manage it. What I don't want to be a part of is every second Sunday's a jolly down south, and we'll fall off the bus when we get back to the rectory. We're not doing it. So if you want a drink when you want a drink, have one, but you're not doing it with me on my time. So if you want to stop for a feed on the way there and a feed on the way back, perfect, because we'll get a bit of nutrition in. You're all working first thing Monday morning, so I'm happy with that. But we're not. This is not the Jolly Boys jolly every second week, and we've got to try and break this Pelican nonsense down, because it's nothing more than psychological bollocks that people use as a weak excuse. You know, lots of people travel to work. How many people, Dave, from your end, travel to Warrington to work at BNFL?
Well, quite a few over the week.
They don't all get shit-faced on the way home, do they?
No.
So why should a rugby player? We're there to reward the Whitehaven faithful who are paying hard-earned money and a lot can't afford that hard-earned money to follow this team. And what they can have a drink on the way home, because their performance isn't under review. Ours is, and we're accountable. Yeah. Theirs is. And if you want to be a fan, get on that bus.
So The Gateshead game, actually, there was a massive carrot dangling before that game, because the Cup draw, the next round of the Cup draw had already been made, and the winners of that game were going to get St Helens, who were the world champions, at home. And that game, or the win at Gateshead, opened up that game for the club. And to me, that was one of the highlights of your 2 years at Whitehaven. Would you agree, Paul?
Dave, I've got goosebumps. The hairs on the back of my arms are standing, as you mentioned. That was a brilliant game. You know, outstanding team. And if it wasn't for that one bit of genius from Tommy Martin, we'd have done and we'd have knocked St Helens out the cup.
Yeah,
he stole the ball on the halfway and brought it back up, and he scored and won it. And one of the most remarkable things in that game is I saw a player for the first time ever do all six tackles, and it was big Phil Sherwin.
Correct. Yeah.
And he made six, and I've never seen anyone work as hard. And you know, the Purdon boys and Big Phil, they humbled me on so many occasions. I can't tell you, with the way that they trained and the way they lived their lives. There's a brilliant story, Dave, about the gym. I'll tell you that shortly. But for Phil Sherwin to come away from the amateur ranks, and I didn't really respect the amateur game as much as I should have done until I went to Whitehaven, and then I saw it in a completely different light. I really, really did. But when you've got Mark Jackson and Big Phil Sherwin playing for Wathbrow one season, and then battering against St Helens and playing so well, it really did your heart good. And it'd have been great if we'd have won that game, but St Helens were on a different planet to us then. The fact we ran them close, and the fact we frightened the life out of them, was testimony to how hard the players had worked and changed and adapted. Absolutely. To a new way of working. And you know, that gave us hope for the remainder of my time there.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that sort of completely, I'd say, from the club being in danger of not existing or being merged or whatever. Just a few months before that game at the recreation ground, packed out, great atmosphere, great performance from the local lads. That really brought the feel good factor back to the club. And as you say, Paul, it was an indication that you know, yourself and the squad were heading in the right direction.
Well, take it, Dave, and agree with it. And that. Although every player on his day played the part in that, and so did all the guys who had, you know, the coaching staff who had gotten there, and everyone involved in working towards that performance. But to see Big Phil Sherwin do six back-to-back tackles, and the last one was a try-saver on the try line, throwing himself from and they didn't run at him. He's gone looking for six.
He's gone looking for them, yeah. Yeah.
Never seen anything quite like it. You know, and there was a training session we had. I can remember two incidents right now. And goodness me, Deb, it's 2002. It's 18 years ago, this, isn't it?
Isn't it?
I was really hooked on occasions that really, I don't mean put me in my place, but just level me right out. One is that I took Howard Hill on one night in training. I'd made a rule. I'd now moved everyone away from training at the rec because the facilities were awful. And as you know, up to Dissington to train on that fantastic new pitch up there. And it used to really annoy me, the grumbles and gripes that players are going, oh, we've got to go up to Ensingham. I'm going, man, I'm just 150 mile up motorway in a car I've borrowed off Ronnie Batty.
Ronnie Batty, yeah.
You know, and you're moaning and whinging that we're going to go 3 or 4 mile up the road to train on a brilliant pitch under floodlights. So I really dug my heels in. We start at six. It was one of those occasions where, and Pete's gone, cool. I went, Pete, we're starting at six. I've set me marker. People now are coming at 5 past, 10 past. There's all sorts of lame excuses. Pete, I'm telling them face to face. You support me in the background. So I brought them all in. Guys, we're now, you know, we've got a big game coming and we're now training 6 o'clock at the pit, at the ground. I'm doing 15 minutes worth of video. If you're not there, you go and training with the reserves or go home. Right? There's my standards. So and I can see this tension because I can read the body language in the room. Anyway, the session comes around 6 o'clock. And they, let's say I've got 25 people during the room. I've got 24 in there because I've counted them. And I can't quite work out yet who's not there, but I know someone's not in. So I'm into my video, and I'm now going through everything that we're going to do in the next game. And the door opens, and there's a polite knock on the door, and Howard Hill comes in a very polite manner and says, sorry, Cole, I went, H, mate, go and run with the stiffs, go and run with the reserves. And the whole room just stopped. So, mate, I said 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
But I said, mate, I don't care. I said 6 o'clock, and mate, close the door because I'm in the middle. And as I'm saying it, Dave, as it's coming out of my mouth, I'm thinking, oh, I've boxed myself into a corner here that I now can't get out of.
Yeah.
And with that, we've done the session. It's deathly silent in the room because I was a player that, A, I really respect. He's a bloke that I really, really like. He's a thoroughly decent fella. I kind of wish that it would have been one of the guys that had been that was a bit loose that needed putting in his place and not Howard Hill, but I would open the door and came in, you know. So anyway, I've now gone outside and you can cut the atmosphere with a knife. And I'm expecting Howard to be gone. And I've gone outside and there he is running around Dissington on his own, running around the field, just doing laps, waiting for us all to come out. It's all set up because Pete Smith's gone out and done it all before me, and I've come out and Pete Smith just pulled me. He's gone. Listen, man, I said, just a word. He said, Howard's been on. He's on back shift. He's on afternoons or whichever shift he's on. He's already changed shift to get to this session, and they've changed it halfway through work. He's actually come out and they don't know he's come out. If he gets caught, he's going to get sacked.
Yeah.
And I went, oh. I went, right, Pete, get him in if you can. So Pete's give him a shout. Throw his whistle on. Throw him all in. And I just went, listen, fellas, Peter's just given me the heads up here. I'd like to apologise. I didn't understand your circumstances. I do understand this isn't about me. And whether it is or it isn't, I shouldn't have behaved and spoke to you like the way I did. And he went, okay, let's crack on. And I went, I was expecting to be knocked out or an absolute mouthful. He went, oh, I got it, Mara, thank you. Let's get on with it.
Brilliant.
It's a brilliant training session. And I went, oh. And you're just humbled by decent people doing the right
thing. Yeah.
And it's something I've never forgot that.
You develop a mutual respect, don't you? It could have ruined me, Dave.
And Howard is a popular player, well liked by everyone at the club. Absolutely. He was in the paper. I didn't have a senior players group then. I didn't invent one. They just assumed leadership. David Seeds, Aaron Lester, Graham Morton, Howard Hill. He could have spun that against me. He really could, and he didn't because he's better than that. So. Yeah. Massive lesson, and there was a very, very similar one with one of me gym sessions. As you know, I'd asked the club to buy some gym equipment because we practically had nothing when I went there.
Yeah.
You remember the whole rack of dumbbells, and we rebuilt the gym underneath the stand.
That's right. Got
it in some form of shape. And I'd written down a weight training list from say three o'clock in the afternoon all the way up to eight or 9 o'clock at night, just on a. So it's not a training night. It wasn't a Tuesday or Thursday. I'm bringing in extra weights nights. Because where guys had said, oh, I'll do my weights on my own. I'm looking at them going, mate, but you're not really, are you? Because I can quite clearly see. So you're going to come in and I'm going to watch you train. I'm going to see how it works. So I've done this list, and I've got guys training in groups of three and fours, and they're coming on every half an hour all the way through the night. And I'm sat there waiting. Anyway, come. Time for the Purdon boys and Big Phil Sherwin, they're nowhere to be seen. So, Dave, 5 o'clock's come, 6 o'clock's come, 7 o'clock's come, 8, 9 o'clock. At this point, I'm at the end of my tether. I've had enough. I'm the only person left at the ground. I've got the keys and I'm locking the gym up on my way out, and I've walked all the way down. I'm just going through the gate at the miners there, the entrance to the ground, and there's a big pickup comes bouncing down there. It's every pothole comes flying down that driveway. Gary, Rob, and Big Phil. I've never seen three blokes look so dirty and filthy in all my life, covered from head to toe in all sorts. I dare to think. they'd been obviously farming all day. It was a decent. They've been dipping, sheep dipping. And I'm just about. I'm fuming because I've waited for him. And you know, I've gone. And they went, no, bother matter. He said, give us the keys. I went, guys, just go home. And I said, my apologies. I didn't realise that's what you were doing all day. I said, it's, you know, that's down to me not to be demanding that farmers on sheep shearing or sheep dipping time or day or whatever it is, that you have to be at my session at 6 o'clock.
That's right.
What I need to do, I need to sit down with Peter and the senior group and work out when it fits everyone, and I fit round you and you don't fit round me. And they just basically laughed it off. I said, guys, you look absolutely fucked. You look filthy. You go home and have a bath and have something to eat and get ready, because I presume you're doing this again tomorrow. And they kind of went, cool, just give us the keys. We'll see you at training tomorrow. Mate, they took the keys off, mate, gone and done the gym session, locked up and turned the lights off on the way out, and then done a full day, then turned up for the running session, the skill session on the Thursday night. Yeah. And you come away, Dave, you think, this is a special group, this. I've landed at a club that I didn't really know had to work under these circumstances or had people in it like this. It literally humbled you.
Yeah. So just your first season, I'd say, bit of a shaky start, some high points and indicators that you're moving in the right direction. So come on to your second season, and there's perhaps a bit more expectation on you for 2002. But the squad was coming together. I think Leroy Joe was back in the team then. It was an asset to any team. And 2002... sort of hit the ground running, really, and it was important because that year there was going to be a second division, which is important to be in, because that was going to be in that division, the National League, as I think they called it, was going to open the doors to bigger and better things. So as I say, a bit of expectation, a bit of pressure. I think what the top nine teams were going to form. There was teams coming down from Super League, and the top nine teams were going to form the next, the National League, as I think they called it. In addition to that, Huddersfield had got relegated from Super League that year. Tony Smith was the coach. So, so 2001 had been good. 2002. Bit more expectation on you, would you say? A bit more pressure?
Yes, you'd have to say that. Although, you've just simply reminded me of something there, Dave, that I'd completely forgotten about. It wasn't that important to me, the league structure. What it was what it was, and all I just had to do was keep improving that group and keep improving as a coach, and the rest would take care of itself. But you mentioned Leroy Joe there. You know, I didn't even know Leroy Joe was living in Whitehaven. I think the halfbacks at the time were Kiddie and Kitchen, and doing reasonably well until I think Lee Kiddie badly broke his ankle, snapped in half. I don't think he ever played again after that.
Yeah.
And when I first went there, Dave Watson was the halfback that the club had signed before I joined as a coach, and Dave Watson was he'd be the best player the best worst player that I never had, that I never signed and never coached.
Yeah,
it was just like an enigma. He'd signed him, he was brilliant in training, then he disappeared, and we built a lot of hopes around him. Although I was very, very aware of life's difficulties, and it was always going to be a rocky and bumpy road with Dave. And you've then got to try and find out who's going to be your main player and who's going to call the shots, whether it's your six or your seven. Obviously, we can run from behind Aaron Lester. But when the halfback situation really began to open up and develop as a problem, that I remember saying to Peter, and the board, I'll have to go south and get someone. I can't find what we've got, what we need instantly. We need a quick fix. And I generally think it was Kenny Shepherd who said to me, why don't you have a look at Leroy Joe? And I went, well, of course I'll have a look at him. Why? He's at OKR, isn't he? He went, no, he left there. Months ago, he lives up on the top near the fire station. I went, you are kidding me. So I've gone up there as quick as I possibly can, knocked on the door, found out, I think, from Pete Smith where he lived, and knocked on the door and introduced myself. And that's the... I didn't know he was in the area. I didn't go scouting for him. I'm thinking of going back to, you know, the other clubs and trying to buy a scrum half or persuade one to leave. And he went, yeah, I'd love to. Very quiet, as you know, Leroy, very unassuming, didn't want to force himself on anyone, and just sat there patiently, I think, working out what he was going to do with the rest of his life after he left OKR for whatever reason. So I was really, really fortunate. And geez, we've got a top class seven, we've got a top class nine. David Seeds can play anywhere. Howard Hill, centre then, we can put him in the back row. We can really build something. So I'm probably more excited about that than whatever the league structure is. But you're right, yeah, you have to keep an eye on it because you have to keep everyone on board and you have to keep the momentum going in the right direction.
Yeah, some of the highlights of that year, again, the season kicked off early. Got off a good start with a couple of wins. The Boxing Day game that year was the traditional derby against Workington, and Workington came out, had quite a few ex-Haven players in the lineup, and they stuck it on us for the first half. I don't know what you said at half time, but the second half of that game was probably as good a Haven performance as I've ever seen, as we turned the town over at the recreation ground.
Well, there was lots of fuel there, Dave, and we were clashing. I didn't really appreciate at all the absolute hatred between Whitehaven and Workington. I just didn't get it until I was in it. And then, you know, goodness me, I've been a part of me Warrington Wigan and me Warrington Widnes derbies for a long, long time, and they don't compare to this. You know, they might be 1,000 on the terrace at Whitehaven or at Derwent Park watching it, or 2,000 as opposed to 20,000 at Wigan. But it's irrelevant because the passion and the fervour for this game is ridiculous. And it spilled over into all aspects of our lives. Then I remember having a right kind of ding-dong with Gary Murdoch, the coach at Workings at the time in the local press. Which was unfortunate, and I've met Gary recently, and to my discredit, a decent bloke he was until I met him about 12 months ago. I've gone to visit Workington doing some work for the RFL.
Yeah.
I spent more time chatting with Gary Murdoch than I did delivering me disciplinary OR match review panel lecture to the players and coaches, and I really enjoyed his company. I didn't know his story, I didn't know his life, he didn't know me either. And we probably wasted too much of each other's time banging it. But it provided fuel for that game. And any address at half-time day would have been about simplification, correcting what's going wrong, highlighting their weaker points, because they're obviously highlighting ours, and having some trust in what we're doing. And it'll be about getting Aaron Lester to get out more from dummy half. And when he goes, we all go with him and we push and we play. Although only 2 points, it's more, because you can't lose those games.
Even if it's
a great effort, it's got to be your very, very best effort. You can't leave anything in the paper. You can't leave anything in the dressing room. Leave anything on a training field. You've got to come off at half four, and there's nothing left. And you better won, because if you're not, your life's absolutely miserable for weeks and months.
That's right. But as I say, a memorable game, a memorable result. Haven started the season well. I think a game shortly after, I think the next home game after that was against Huddersfield, as I say, coached by Tony Smith at the time. And Huddersfield got out of that with a draw. A Super League team. The season before, and another great performance from the Haven that day at the Rectory.
It was a brilliant performance. They're really hard to measure one against the other. But if you're, Dave, was it 9-9?
At least 14 apiece.
14 apiece, goodness me. You know, to play that well against a Super League side, in essence, because they still were, they just retained everyone that they had when they went down, and trained and played in a full-time manner, full-time status. So, you know, it just gives the players confidence that you're not a million miles away. I used to get that kind of feeling from the players, and from a lot of people, to be fair, in Whitehaven, that going through the mountains and down the motorway, you were going to a different world, and you weren't really. There weren't many centres better than David Sees, and he's a Kells kid. He's come off the hill.
That's right.
You know, and he's better than most centres in Super League. And, you know, Aaron Lester's come to Whitehaven on a different route, but he's as good as anyone knocking
that's
around.
Right. And, you know, because they're local, we just don't really appreciate how good they are. You know, if
Craig Chambers and Howard Hill and Graham Morton would have been top quality Super League players, without a doubt. If they'd been born in Wigan and Warrington, they'd have come through a system which would have helped them more than the one that they came through. That's not to decry anything that happened, because you know, that amateur system in Whitehaven, the Cumberland Amateur Rugby League Association, is a formidable group. I learned so much from them on how to approach players, what's not acceptable from professional clubs towards the amateur players. Signing Phil Sherwin and signing
Mark Jackson
from Wathbrow was harder than signing Andrew Johns.
Yeah.
Signing Mark Jackson and Phil Sherwin was harder than signing Andrew Johns.
Yeah. There's certain courtesies and protocols and understandings you've got to, you must go through, otherwise you get people's backs up and it just makes things almost impossible.
There was no damage done. There was no damage done previously between Warrington Wolves and the Newcastle Knights. There was no baggage, no damage done either way.
Yeah.
When I used to go, you know, I kind of fell in love with Cumbria, and I'd walk and ramble and fell walk as much as I could. And I kind of stumbled across a game one day at Wathbrow. I've come down off the hills and walked through Wathbrow. And as I'm coming down, the sound carries bizarrely, doesn't it, around there?
It goes across the valley,
I've come down, I've just stumbled across a game. It's Wathbrow playing whoever. David, I'm all crag wrapped up. I've got the bob hat on, the boots, the jacket, the Kendall mint cake. I'm doing the full works. And I've just landed and walked down, followed the noise because I could see a game as I'm coming off. And I ended up standing on the pitch, side of the pitch, watching a game with, you know, 300 or 400 others, which was most unusual for me, because amateur games in Warrington, there's 20, 30 people there. Yeah. There's hundreds stood round this field. And I'm getting the evils. People are going, right, what are you doing here? Who are you after? I'm going, well, I've just come for a walk. And no one's believing me, Dave.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this big blonde thing goes tear-arsing through and absolutely wipes out someone in front of us. And then this hooker, who looks as big as any of the props, just literally flies round the field and batters everything in sight. You know, and I'm going, who's that? As I'm asking people, who's that? No one's giving me an answer because they recognise who I am, and probably... and I was thinking, what my motives are. Goodness me, they're good enough for us. They're better. They're as good, if not better, than what we've got. You know. But for me then to go back and say to Pete Smith, Pete, who on earth is the big blonde bloke? Oh, that'd be big Phil Sherwin. So who's the hooker? Oh, Mark Jackson. Right, Christ, let's get him. He went, oh, hang on a bit. So from there, I've gone to Kenny Shepard. I've gone, right, Ken, what do we do here? And he's gone, right, let me organise some meetings. It took half a dozen meetings to get to the point before I've even spoke to the players. And the instruction from Kenny Shepherd was, do not speak to these two blokes until you get the nod to speak. If you do,
that's right.
It's all over. You won't get them.
Yeah.
And
even
then, persuading Mark Jackson and Phil Sherwin to leave the amateur game was much harder than I thought it would. Most players I know would leave Crossfields or Woolston or Latchford or Rylands in a heartbeat to sign for Warrington. And it just wasn't the case there. It really struggled to understand it. But then when you look at the work that's done by all the junior teams and the Cumberland Amateur Rugby League and all the schools up there, it's staggering. And they won't allow their players to be used and abused. And when it's
happening, it's all right.
And they put me right. They really did put me right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right, so 2002, as I say, the team was obviously starting to play, consistently, got some good wins. One of the things, just looking through the record, we had another good cup run that year, and the fifth round, we were drawn away to Lee. Now Lee were the big daddies of the competition at that point. Much as they are, I suppose, today, and good side with some good players in. I think Simon Knox was playing for them, who'd previously been at Bradford. And there was lots more ex Super League players, and we went there in the cup. And one of the most amazing games, again, I remember, because we went there, we were outplayed, but second half came out, and again, having seemingly lost the game, we won it with minutes to go, and they kicked off to us, and I think it was Howard Hill actually just couldn't field the kickoff, and we thought, well, we've just got to put six tackles in to win this game. And what happened? They went over and scored. I think I was doing the summarising on the video that day, what a game! But as I say, a game we'd lost and won, and then ultimately lost, but. A great spectacle and a great cup, one of the great cup ties of Whitehaven. I say a packed Hilton Park, lots of Whitehaven fans there, and there was so much disappointment afterwards. I think that was perhaps a marker of how far the team had come, that they were so disappointed with themselves and the result afterwards.
Well, it is, because I think Hull KR were a formidable side then. Leeds certainly were. Barrow had intentions of going up, and so did Workington. There was a Huddersfield, obviously, up and down. There were a number of teams that saw themselves to be a cut above. And when you came up against them, obviously, Widnes were up and down around that time as well. They're markers, because you are competing against clubs with far more facilities and far more money available to buy those players and keep those players. But there's some great times. I mean, I'm trying to remember the actual game day where we've won it in the last second. We've gone full length at Whitehaven.
Yeah, I was going to come on to that. Just so later on that season, you'd brought Rob Jackson, I think, from Wigan, and it was against Oldham. Yes. And it looked like Oldham had done us, and right in the must have been injury time. Rob Jackson, who was on loan for us at the time, took off and went the length of the field to score a winning try. Yeah,
really. Peter Lupton might have been in that team. Peter had been around the block a bit,
That's right. That's right.
There's some, they are brilliant memories. And when you bring a guy in like that on loan, I mean, I brought a few guys up from Warrington, big Warren Stevens, who really, really enjoyed his time at White. The fact that he was getting some regular rugby, and B, he loved the way that he was treated. And I found that there. People, and it's something I really did note, people treated my family, my wife and my children, as well as they treated me. Because you can, when you're playing and coaching, it can become all about you. But I still have good friends to this day who were more friends with, my family than they were with me. it was just a lovely, lovely time. And when you can bring players up for 6 weeks periods and they still to this day speak about how well they were treated up there, it gives you a fair reflection on not just the club, but the town, the community. Yeah. I found it greatly different to Warrington. Some good, some bad, but across the piece, I was treated so well there. I still think of it so fondly.
Yeah. As I say, in 2002, the team, despite one or two little wobbles, performed much more consistently. And that was obviously noticed throughout the rugby league. And in August, I'm not quite sure who was coach at Warrington at the time, but whoever was coach was the latest in a long line of coaches to be shown the door at Wilderspool, as it was then. And it was to yourself that Warrington turned to take up the mantle of head coach at the club. So, it must have been a difficult decision, but in another way, an easy decision for you.
No, it wasn't easy at all, Dave. I was more reluctant to leave than I was excited about going back. And I mean that sincerely. I knew Warrington obviously very well from my time there, but because I was literally pinching all the Warrington equipment on a weekly basis when we were training at Whitehaven. I'd load Ronnie Batty's car up with the sledges, the weights, the balls, the bags, the tackle bags, as much as I possibly can. My good mate Paul Derbyshire, who was still at Warrington, the assistant coach then, because we were both coach when I was there. I'd meet him. He'd give me the keys to the he had them anyway, to the lockup. So I'd go there early in the morning, pick up all, meet with the coach, meet with some of the coaches and the players, and beg, steal and borrow as much training kit as I could and bring it up and then take it back the following night. So I'd done my due diligence at Warrington by default. I knew it better than the coaches, because I was no longer in a position of power there. So people are giving information freely. And it was an absolute car crash, an utter disaster. When I went back in 2002, I was the fourth person, the fourth coach in 12 calendar months. So it was Darrell Vanderbilt, then it was Steve Anderson, then it was David Plange. All three had coached Warrington within 12 months, and I went back and we had six. There were six games to go. And I'd knocked them back two, three times in approaches during that period because I didn't like the culture there. I didn't like what was going on. And when one coach went, then the second coach went, then the third coach went, and it was the same board of directors that were kept coming back in different ways and through different channels until that final kind of approach. And I said, I don't want to come back. I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. It's really difficult because I'm traveling three or four times a week. I'm living over in Dissington, next to the Globe, which has its challenges, Dave. I did at the time, you know. But it was it's tough. It's harder probably on the family than it is on me. So I'm desperate to come back, and I didn't go back to Warrington for the money. I dropped wages to go to Whitehaven as head coach, assistant coach at Warrington, and when I went back, the club was in such a poor state. The wages going back to Warrington weren't brilliant, and it wasn't a massive part of my kind of psyche at the time. But I went back because of Simon Moran. Simon Moran was he was there when I left, but not in the same capacity. And I knew if I thought I was someone that had Warrington at heart, then in my discussions with Simon Moran, I came across someone that had it in buckets full. It put me to shame, you know. Yes. So it was that took me back to Warrington. It was the worst Warrington team in the history of Warrington Rugby League Club. It's not my opinion. The records show that. They were 12th out of 12th and going down. you know, so I didn't go back for an easy ride. I could have stayed at Whitehaven and built on the work that we'd all done. But it was Simon Moran's vision that persuaded me to go back. I met him once on a day off in Warrington, and then had the real difficult job of ringing up Kenny Shepherd and going and telling him. And it was one of the most difficult days I've ever had.
But as I say, everything sort of, things move on and things come to a natural conclusion. But certainly, 2 seasons at Whitehaven, you'd made a massive difference to the Whitehaven club. You'd probably learned so much yourself. So you look back on that really as a special time, as a pivotal time even in your life and in your career.
In all aspects of my life, Dave, the rugby's there for all to see. That is a matter of fact and record, and people can read into that whatever they like. When you speak to good people like yourselves and you lived it and you saw the difference in the performance.
That's Dave, right.
More importantly for me, the difference in attitude to the players at training, their lifestyles and how we played and the style of rugby was more as important to me as getting the results. And I do know that results are very important. It's what we're judged by. But I thought there was a change in culture, and that's what I'm really, really proud of. But I learned so much about myself. I'm grateful to Whitehaven. I wouldn't have had 6 years at Warrington as head coach without the 2 years I had at Whitehaven, without a shadow of a doubt.
Certainly, yeah, brilliant. Yeah, well, that's been amazing to sort of talk through that with you, Paul. As I say, we're coming up sort of an hour. And we probably haven't covered all we want to do, but we've covered so much, recounted and revisited so many great memories. And it's been brilliant to talk to you, Paul. So thanks very much for joining us on the Haven Fans podcast. Great to talk with you again. And hopefully we'll keep in touch and wish you all the best for the future, whatever that the future holds for yourself. So thanks very much, Paul. Thank you.
Dave, it's a pleasure, and just a final message to the Whitehaven faithful, that they are as passionate as group of fans and supporters that I've ever come across. They make the voices heard, and those words of Gary Chambers very early on, and it was a matter of just have a go. If you have a go, they'll support you this lot. If you don't, if they don't make, they'll ruin you. And it was very, very true.
And
give them everything you've got, have a go, and if you don't, they'll come unstuck. They won't set you on, and it's very true.
You rolled the dice. You rolled the dice, and he came up trumps to mix me metaphors there.
Yes, well, I'll check him. I do that myself, Dave.
Brilliant, Paul. Thanks very much. All the very best to you. Great to speak to you. And as I say, whatever you're doing now and in the future, all the very best from everybody at Whitehaven.
Well, I'll get up there as much as I possibly can, and we'll reminisce.